Okay, we're spreading by the two dots on the top of Memchet and Aleph. Here, according to Mishnah, Amar lechen v'ni, ten li bedinar peirot. So the purchaser comes in and says, give me a dinar's worth of peirot. And then afterwards, they have a disagreement as to whether he had already paid for it or he needs to pay for it. Tanya, we have a braita. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, e matai. When is that true? Bizman shepeirot zvurim umnuchim. That's when they are piled up and left. Ushnehem urim aleihem. And they're both claiming rights to the peirot. Aval hivshilam bekupato le'achorav. If he put him on his back, he took a sack, threw it on his back. Amotzi mechavero alav haraya. Then the burden of proof is on the one who's trying to take the peirot away from that individual. So now Rashi over here says, Ematai tzarich balabayit lishava. When does the balabayit have to take a shvua? Bizman sheperot tzburim. That's when the peirot are lined up. Now, if you go back to the Mishnah, if you remember that Rashi in the Mishnah says that the shvua that the Bala Bayit here is taking is a shvua teseh, which is that the Bala Bayit already got the peirot, and there's a question as to whether he paid for them or not. The Bala Bayit says, I already put the coin into your till, into your bag, and the Chenveni says, I didn't receive anything yet. And Rashi says he takes the equivalent of what would be a shvuat hesed, and he walks away and he doesn't have to pay at all. We discussed already the issues with that as to how could there be a shvuat hesed in the Mishnah, as well as the fact that the Mishnah seems to be speaking about nishbayim v'notnim. But that is Rashi's shita, that the individual already walked off with the items. He has the payroll already. Just a question of if he paid or not. And he's kofar bakol about the payment. He has to take a shvua to substantiate the fact that he paid already. And then if you remember, Rashi Shita, is that Rabbi Yehuda argues on the ratio of the Mishnah over there. He says, Bayud Omer, kol shapeirot biyado, yado elo yana. Whoever has the peirot has the upper hand. Unlike the Tanakama who says you have to take a shvua, the Bala Bayit can take it without any evidence. If he says you don't need a shvua, shein derech en bani amokher shelo b'hakafa. Mocher doesn't sell on credit like that. Litein et peirot et shekabel et dinar. He wants the dinar first. He's not going to sell on credit. Since there's overwhelming evidence that the Shulchani or the Chenveni would not release their item without having first received payment, in that case, they don't even need to take a shvua in order to substantiate the claim of the Bala Bayit. Basically, according to Rashi, the machloket here is when the guy walks off with the peirot. Now you come over here and Rashi says, Ematai nishba. Where's the case where you take a shbu'a? That is, if they are munachim, birshut rabim. But if they're already in your possession, amotzi michavereo lavaraya. For Rashi over here, the Ematai does not seem to be explained the position of the chachamim, because the position of the Tanakama is that when it already came into the possession of the individual, he has to take a shvat hesed. But Rabbi Yehuda says this, that when he already has possession of the peirot, he can do it without a shvua. But if the peirot are still in the reshut rabim, that's where you need a shvua, because he has yet to take possession of the peirot, and that's where he does not have the upper hand, and the shvua would be applicable. So Rabbi Yehuda is explaining, in my opinion, where is it that the Bala Bayit has to take a shvua? Where do I agree with the position of the chachamim? In the ratio where the Bala Bayit needs to take a shvua, that's in an instance when there are b'shut harabim. But if the Bala Bayit already walked off with them, then amotzi mechavero alav haraya. And in that case, I will say that the Bala Bayit doesn't even need to take a shvua. Although the Chachamim will believe that you do have to take a shvua. Therefore, according to Rashi, the machloket between them is in a case where they walk off with it. In the case where it's b'shut rabim, Rabbi Yehuda actually acquiesces to the position of the chachamim. But that means that the Ematai, according to Rashi, over here, it's not explaining the position of the chachamim, but rather explaining Rabbi Yehuda's position. And that is not your classic use of the word Ematai, according to Rabbi Yehuda, which usually means that Rabbi Yehuda is defining or explaining the position of the chachamim. You could argue that the Ematai over here is explaining where he agrees with the chachamim. Which says, in the case where it's put in Reshut Rabim, that's where I agree you have to take a shvua. But already, if it's in the possession of the Bala Bayit, there's no reason for a shvua, because of Motzi Mechavero Alav Haraya. And that might be one way to understand Rashi. Or to use what the Bala Tosafot say over here, which is that Ematai is only the Faresh when it's inside of a Mishnah. But in a Braita, that principle doesn't necessarily apply. Whereas the Rif, and you can see here in the Rabbeinu Tam, in the Tosfot over here, on Mem Chet Amud Aleph, they both say that the case in the Mishnah is a case of Nishba'in Vinot Lin. The Rif claims that it's a case where it's found in the Rishut HaRabim. According to the Rabbeinu Tam, it is in the basket of the Koneh, but still in the store of the Chenvani. He has yet to possess it or take it, and therefore it's a Nishba Vinotel because it's left the possession of the Chenvani. And he takes a Shvuah to substantiate his claim that he already purchased the Peirot, and the Peirot are his, and that the Chenvani can't hold them back from him. In the next case of the Chenvani is where the Baal HaBayit gave the coin, but it's still between the two of them. And the Chiddush in each of these cases is that you are Nishba Vinotel, since it left the possession of the person who technically had it. Since it already left his possession, we throw the Shvuah to the one who's going to take it, and we save Nishba Vinotel. Therefore, the Rif reads, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eimatai. Totally different. This is the way that we explain the Mishnah when we read it is, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eimatai. Bizman shepirot tzvurim umunachim b'shut rabim, ushneim orim aleim, afal imshilim b'kupato le'acharov, amotzim michavero labaraya. Hada Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Eimatai. The fact that Rabbi Yehuda here says, Eimatai, Bizman shepirot tzvurim umunachim b'shut rabim, lava liba didei b'lev chud kamar. He's not just saying that in his own position, Ela ben aliba didei, ben aliba de rabbanan. He's saying that both according to his position and the position of the rabbanan. Haidina de flikube, when do we argue? Bizman sheperot tzvurim umunachim b'shut rabim. That's the time when we argue. Aval im yifshilam bekupato l'acharav, he throws him on his back and walks off, amotzi mechaveilo alav araya, divrei hakol, ben Rabbi Yehuda, ben the rabbanan. That's according to Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan. The Kaimelon, the Hohecha, Dama Rabbi Yehuda, Ematai. Because the principle is that anytime Rabbi Yehuda says Ematai, Ubameh, Einu El Lefaresh Divrei Chachamim. He's coming to explain the position of the Chachamim, not his own position. V'adin, Binyana Shulchani, Ubalabayit. And the same is true by the Shulchani and the Balabayit. Hadin Bishnehem Acharu. The din in both of them is the same. Ulefum Adin Perusha. And based on the din is the Perusha, Dama Rabbi Yehuda. Kosha peirot yado. Anybody who has the peirot in his hands, yado, alel yona. Then he has the upper hand, a balabayit koi. That's going on the balabayit, kasavar Rabbi Yehuda. Betray bove yishova balabayit. And in both cases, the balabayit takes the shvuah. And this is like we saw before in the Mishnah, the sheet of the Rambam, which obviously stems from the Rif as well. Which is that Rabbi Yehuda is really only arguing on the second case in each of these instances and not the first case. In the first case, we say Baal HaBayit Yishava and he takes the peirot, or by the Shulchani, the Baal HaBayit takes a shvuah and he takes the mot and doesn't pay. In the second case, the Tanakamo says that the Chenvani takes a shvuah. He already gave him the peirot and he takes the peirot and then he doesn't have to give him any more peirot. And in the latter case, the Shulchani takes the Shvuah, he already gave him the change, and he doesn't have to give him any more money. Rabbi Yehuda argues on the latter case in each section, which is that in all cases, the Baal HaBayit takes the Shvuah. The first case, in the Peirot, he already is taking the Shvuah. In the second case of the Chenvani, the Baal HaBayit will take a Shvuah again, because Yado al El Yonah, because ever the Peirot are in the possession of, has the upper hand. And since the Peirot have already left the possession of the Chenvani, because they're already out in the Rishut HaRabim, that gives the Baal HaBayit the advantage, and in both those situations, he should take the Shvuah. And in the case of the Shulchani doesn't release money unless he got paid, and therefore the Baal HaBayit has the upper hand in both these cases, and he can take a Shvuah, and in the first case not pay, and in the second case, get the change that he is owed. Therefore, the Rif believes that, first of all, Rabbi Yehuda only argues on the second case in each scenario. And there he says that the Baal HaBayit, instead of either the Chenvani and Shulchani, takes the Shvuah. In addition, he believes that when Rabbi Yehuda says, Eimatai, he's modifying where the machloket between him and the Chachamim are. That when is it true that I say my piece and the Chachamim say their piece? That's when everything is in Rishut HaRabim. That's been by the Chenvani, been by the Shulchani. But in the case where the Baal HaBayit has already walked off with this stuff, in that case, everybody will agree, Motzim Lechavero Labaraya, and there's no room for a Shvuah. So in a Rishut HaRabim, they both agree that there is a Shvuah, which is a question about who takes the Shvuah. In the first case, the Bodenson says it is the Bala Bayit. In the second case, the Tanakhama says it's the Chenmani or the Shulchani, and Rabbi Yehuda says it is the Bala Bayit again. Once it's already in the possession of the Bala Bayit, then everybody agrees there's no room for a Shvua, and it's Motzi Mechavero Alav Araya. So the way the Rif reads the Gemara is that when he comes and says here, Ein Matai, he's explaining when the Chachamim and I disagree. And that way it maintains the normal way that Rabbi Yehuda uses Ein Matai, which is that he is being Mifaresh, the position of the Chachamim. And that's what he's saying here. The Chachamim only have their position when it's Rishut Rabim. That is the view of the Rif. On the other hand, Rashi reads over here that Rabbi Yehuda is coming to define his position. And that is, he says, when are the Rabbonon correct about the fact that you take a Shvua? That's when it's in Rishut Rabim. But if we walk off with it, that's when we argue. So we argue when he walks off with it, meaning that Rashi says that Rabbi Yehuda will say then, no Shvua, and the Chachamim will still say there is a Shvua. So that's the machlokah between the Rif and Rashi has to explain the Mishnah, and it also has impact on how you explain this statement here of Rabbi Yehuda. Amar l'shun chale, and that next piece of the Mishnah is if the Shulchani, he asks him to give me change of a dinar. Shulchani gives him the change of the dinar, and he says, pay for the change that I just gave you. The Baal Bayit says, I already gave you the money to change, and the Shulchani says, you didn't pay me. Over there, Baal Bayit takes a shvua to substantiate his claim. The same thing we just said above will application over here as well, which is that, according to the Rif, that machloke between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim will only be Birshut HaRabim. As according to Rashi, the machloke will be when he walked off with it, it's already in his wallet. So now the Gemara says, Vitzricha, why do I need two cases in the Mishnah? Why do I need the case of Shulchani as well as Chenvani? They both basically say the same thing, which is that the Baal Bayit takes a Shvuah and walks. And then, depending if you're Rashi or the Rif, where that is will be the same in both of those cases. Where it says, Tricha, we need both cases. Because if you had just told me the case of the Chenvani, because Perot go bad. Since they start to go bad, he wants them out of his possession as fast as possible. Rashi says, as soon as the Lokeach looks like he has any interest in buying, the Chenvani is pushing them into his bucket because he wants them out of here before they start going bad. He has a ticking time bomb here. His merchandise has shelf life, and he wants it out as fast as possible. So he puts it into the other guy's kelim as fast as possible, and that's maybe why the Rabbonon believe. People give their payrot and then take money, mishum de mirkave ubalis vuninu, because they go bad and they want to sell them quickly. Aval ma'ot, delo mirkave, but ma'ot, or money that doesn't go bad, ema modi le the Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe then they would agree to Rabbi Yehuda's position that you don't need a shvu'ah. Beit marbaha, had you only had the case of the ma'ot, ba'akama Rabbi Yehuda, that's where Rabbi Yehuda has his position. By the case of the Chenvani, maybe he would agree with the Rabbonon. So, according to Rashi, the reason that they're found in the other guy's possession is because the Chenvani wants to rid himself of these things before they go bad because of the shelf life. And maybe that's why over there, it makes sense why they want the Baal Bayit to take the Shvu'ah, because there are some questions as to what it's doing in its possession. On the other hand, by the Shulchani, where there's no reason to throw the money into the possession of the other individual, that's good evidence of the fact that he has it, and maybe the Chachamim agree to Rabbi Yehuda, according to Rashi, you don't have to take a Shvua. And vice versa, in the case of Shulchani, maybe that's where Rabbi Yehuda says you don't need a Shvua, but by a Chenvani, he would agree to the position of the Chachamim that the reason it's in the possession of the Baal Bayit is because the Chenvani wants to get rid of it. Whereas according to the Rif, the Rein Utam, who think that the whole scenario is in Rishut Rabim, Migash brings the Avida de Mirkabe is that the reason to do that is to be Mifarsim. The reason they're in the Rishut Rabim is because the Chenvani wants to move the merchandise. He puts them in the Rishut Rabim to show people that they need to buy him now, otherwise they're not going to be around anymore. And so maybe in the Seifa case, the reason that the Perot have left the possession of the Chenvani is not because the Baal Bayit really has the upper hand, and like Rabbi Yehuda, you should take a Shvua, but because the Chenvani wants them out there to advertise them and get rid of them. And for that reason, they're found in the Rishut HaRabim. And that's why the Chachamim believe that the Chenvani takes the Shvua and not the Bala Bayit. On the other hand, in the case of the Shulchani, where there's no reason to put his money out in the Rishut HaRabim, then maybe they would agree to Rabbi Yehuda and say that the Bala Bayit should take the Shvua. And vice versa, maybe Rabbi Yehuda says his position by the Shulchani, because there it makes no sense why the stuff's out in the Rishut HaRabim. So that's evidence of the fact that the Bala Bayit probably is in more control over here. But by the Chenvani, where there is a reason for the Chenvani to put it out in the Rishut HaRabim, that doesn't give you evidence that the Bala Bayit is really entitled to it. And that's why maybe he would agree to the Chachamim over there that you take a Shvua. And the Kamash Malon is that they argue in both cases. That's what Rashi that means. In the two first cases, the reason that you don't have to take a Shvua is because it's already in the possession of the Bala Bayit. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's no Shvua needed because the Bala Bayit is already in possession of it. The Chachamim, it's equivalent of a Shvuat Heset. Whereas for the Rif, the Rabbeinu Tam, it's a Nishba Benotel case. Rabbi Yehuda believes that you're Nishba Benotel in all the cases because it's already left the possession of the Chenvani or the Shulchani. Whereas the Chachamim believe that in the first case where the Perot have already left the possession of the Chenvani, that gives the Baal Bayit the upper hand, or the Shulchani, the money has left his hand, gives the Baal Bayit the upper hand to be Nishba Benotel. But in the latter case, Nishba Benotel, the Chenvani, that he takes the payroll back, because there is circumstantial evidence that the guy wouldn't have paid and just left the payroll there. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda believes that the fact that the payroll left the possession of the Chenvani is good evidence of the fact that the Baal Bayit already has them, and then he's Nishba Benotel. We saw in the Mishnah there was a list of Shvuot that were taken based on the Mishnayot and Ketubot. Those are, for instance, Bogemet Ketubatas, a woman who comes to collect her Ketubah and already says, I got a portion of it already. Or if she comes to collect from the husband's estate when the husband is not present. Or you have an Eid Echad saying that it's Parua. These are all individuals that have to take a Shvua. And the Mishnah says, Kashem, all of these individuals have to take a Shvua. So too, a Yitomim lo Yifru. Yitomim can't collect without a Shvua. Mara wants to know, Miman, who are the Yitomim collecting from that they need to take a Shvua? Ilema milove, if you think it's from the debtor, Avon Shakil Belo Shvua, Vinu Bishvua, their father collects from the debtor when he brings the shtar and shows that he owes him the money without a Shvua. Vinu Bishvua, why should they require a Shvua? Why do they have any less claim to the credit that was extended if they're showing up with the shtar and the debtor has to pay what is said in the shtar? There's no reason for him not to pay it. So if the father didn't have to take a Shvua, why should they have to take a Shvua? Hachi kamar. So this is what it's meant. V'chein ha-yitomim min ha-yitomim lo yifru ela bishvua. When yitomim go to collect from other yitomim, they can only collect with a Shvua. Rabu Shmuel damrei tarvayu lo shanu ela shemit malveh b'chayoloveh. That's only true if the malveh predeceases the loveh. Because in that situation, the malveh, when he passes away, the Yitomim can still collect from the Loveh because they still have the shtar and the claim against the Loveh. Then when the Loveh passes away, they're obligated to take a Shvua to the Yitomim, like anybody would have to take a Shvua to the Yitomim of the Loveh. About, on the opposite scenario, Meit Loveh b'chayim Malveh. If the debtor predeceases the Malveh, the creditor, Kvar nitchayev Malveh l'bnei Loveh Shvua. Then the creditor already owes the children of the Loveh Shvua, and you can't pass a Shvua to your children, the way the Rashi states it. You can't pass money that is only free to release through a Shvua to your children. You can pass material possessions, you can pass to your children. But if the material possessions require an intangible item, which is this Shvua, you can't pass that to your children. They can't, in essence, what Rashi says is, take the Shvua that the father needs to take over here. When the Loveh passes away, the father now has to take a Shvua to the Yitomim of the debtor to say that he is owed the money, he never collected the money, and please pay up over here. The Yitomim of the Malveh, once the creditor passes away, can't say that. They were not privy to the transaction. They're not the other party here to know whether they got paid or not. What they can take a Shvua about is Lo Pakad Nuaba. Arba didn't tell us anything about that. We don't find any Shovarim. We don't find any receipts over here. But as Rashi pointed out yesterday, that's not the Shvua that they're obligated to take. And since that's not the Shvua they're obligated to take, therefore, they can't do what their father needed to do. And since he can't pass that Shvua to them, they can't collect in that situation. So this is the view of Rav and Shmuel that we saw yesterday, that when you have an obligation to take a shvuah, to collect, a toveya that needs to take a shvuah to collect, if you can't take that shvuah, you're not going to collect. And that is even in shvuot dirabanan. That's even in a case where you have a shvuah dirabanan, where here it's an imposition midirabanan, that they say, take a shvuah before you take it, that still will block your ability to collect in this situation. Shachmua kamei derabbi Elazar. So they sent this din of Rav Shmuel to Rabbi Elazar, who's in Eretz Yisrael. Shvazu mativa. What's the story with this shvua? So that's the way that Rashi reads it, the way that I just read it, which is they sent over to Rabbi Elazar, what's the story with this shvua of Rav Shmuel, which is so strong that it prevents you from collecting money that's rightfully yours. You have a shtar that indicates there is credit outstanding. We have no reason to believe that they don't owe the money, except for the fact that we can't pass the shvua from the father to the children. And for that reason, a shvua d'rabbanan is going to block their ability to collect what is otherwise rightfully theirs. So that's the nature of the question, according to Rashi. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Chananel brings that the nature of the question is the following. Shachul kamei Rabbi Elazar, they sent the din of Rav and Shmuel to Rabbi Elazar, Amar. Then Rabbi Elazar himself said, shvua zu mativa. What's the story with this shvua? So, in the way Rashi reads it, they were sending it to Rabbi Elazar to try to determine what's the purpose of the shvua. According to the way the Rabbeinu Chananel reads it, is that Rabbi Elazar himself was saying, what's the story with this shvua? And then, the way that he responds, obviously, has impact based on what you think the question is. He says, Shalach lo, he sends back to them, Nershim nishbaim shvata yershim v'notlim. The yershim take a shvua, and they collect. According to the way that we read it, according to Rashi, they're saying to him, what's the story with this shvua? And his answer to them is, no problem, just switch the shvua that they have to take. Their father had to take a shvua saying that he didn't get paid. They'll take a shvua to Yershim, which says that they didn't get any information. And so they'll be able to use the shvua to get the money. On the other hand, if you view it that Rabbi Elazar himself is asking the question, which is, what's the story with this shvua? Then he's basically outright arguing. Again, in both cases, he's arguing, but he's then outright arguing and say that shvua to Yershim and Yerthim. I don't believe what Rav and Shmuel say is correct. The Yershim can take a shvua and collect over here. So in the first way we explain going to Rashi, he's explaining that, yes, you can't pass a shvua to your children, but nevertheless, you have an alternate shvua which will free you of the problem, and that's why it's not as strong as you think. The shvua is not so strong that you can't collect, you just have to switch the shvua. The other case, he basically says, you can't pass down the shvua to your children. They'll just take the shvua that is relevant to them when you pass that shvua to your children. Shachua b'mei Rabbi Ami. So then in the time of Rabbi Ami, they sent it again to ask, what's the story with this shvua of Rav and Shmuel? Amar kulei hai shalchila v'azle. So many times we've already sent this. We know this information. If we had found something that made sense or we could make heads or tails out of it, don't you think we would have sent you already? It's not like we're not aware of it. It's not like we don't know about it. There's nothing new to report, and that's why you haven't heard from us. Elam Rabbi Ami, ho, v'atul yadan. All right, now that you raised the issue already, name of Milta. Let us say something about it. Let's figure this out. Amad bidin. If he already went to court, umait, and then died, kvar nitchayev malva l'bnei lova shuva. Once he went to court, the court obligates the shvua, and that's a shvua that can't be passed to the children. So explain Rav and Shmuel in a case where he's already gone to court to collect, and then the court obligated him in a shvua. Once he was obligated in a shvua, he can't pass it down. Lo amad b'din, but if he never ended up in court, umait, and he died, yershim nishbaim shvata yershim inotim, then the yershim can take a shvua and collect. So he's basically reaching a compromise between the position of Rav and Shmuel and Rabbi Elazar. Says Rav and Shmuel's position is correct. Once you've gone to the court, the court obligated you in a shvua, you can't pass that to your kids. If you never ended up court, then the shvua was never incumbent upon you, and therefore when you passed away, then your yershim become the new party, and then for them, they take the shvua to yershim, and they can collect, and that's Rabbi Elazar's view. Matkif la Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman asked the question on this, he refused to accept this concept. Atu Beit Dina ka mechayvi le shvua. Does Beit Din, the one who makes mechayv in a shvua? Mi'idno de shochiv loveh. From the moment the debtor passes away, automatically now the malva is obligated to provide a shvua to the children of the debtor. And that's a trigger. The trigger is the death of the loveh is what makes him obligated to take a shua. Doesn't matter whether he ended up in court or not ended up in court. That's the institution of the chachamim. So that's interesting. Again, in the view of Rav Nachman, we clearly are going to follow Rav Nachman here, and the Gemara is going to continue to follow Rav Nachman. But you could think about it that the machloket between them revolves around the nature of this shvuah. We find a similar concept by Knas, that the Rishonim know that there's a difference between monetary obligations and fines that are imposed. When it comes to monetary obligations, they exist whether you show up in court or don't show up in court because you have a monetary obligation. A fine or a knas is something that the Beit Din imposes on you. It's not automatic that you're going to get the knas. Therefore, the existence of the knas only happens once you enter into Beit Din. So you could argue the same thing here with regards to this shvuah. This is an imposition midrabanan. It's a shvuah midrabanan. It's not necessarily something that automatically happens. Maybe it's only once Beit Din imposes it on you, does the shvuah then become an obligation to take. Without that, you won't have to take the shvuah because you didn't go to Beit Din in order to collect. If you go to Beit Din will insist on you taking the shvuah. So you could argue, and that might be what Rabbi Ami was suggesting, is that the shvuah is dependent on Beit Din imposing it on you because it's not a natural shvuah. It's not a shvuah midorait, that's a shvuah midorabanan. Rav Nachman is saying is that the institution of the chachamim of this shvuah works in a way that it's obligatory as soon as the loveh passes away. It becomes your obligation to take the shvuah, irrespective of whether you show up in Beit Din or not. You have an obligation to take the shvuah based on the takanat chachamim. So maybe they're arguing about the nature of this shvuah derabanan as to whether it's an institution that comes in automatically, which is Rav Nachman's position, or is it an institution that says that Beit Din needs to impose it on you, and that's when the shvuah becomes an obligation. So that would explain their machloket. Now, Elam Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman now says, Ita the Rav Shmuel, Ita, Ileta Leta. Either Rav Shmuel applies across the board, or they don't apply across the board. Alma, Misapkale. See from this that he has a safek as to whether to paskin like Rav Shmuel or not to paskin like Rav Shmuel. Tamar Rav Yosef bar Yume, Avad Rav Nachman, Uvda, Yachloko. Wait a minute. Didn't we see in yesterday's daf that Rav Nachman in the end, after saying he didn't know to Rava the authorship of the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi and about the halacha, later on we saw that he did know, and he came to the conclusion that Rabbi Yossi was the author of the position of Yachloku in the Mishnah, and he had a case where he passed in that way, that Yachloku. Now, if he holds like Rabbi Yossi, which is Yachloku, that means that he doesn't hold like Rabbi Meir, who says Chazra Shvualim Koma. Rav and Shmuel are explaining the position of Rabbi Meir of Chazrav Shvualim Koma. So why over here does he have a safek about the din if he paskin like Rabbi Yossi? My answer is, L'dvarav, to Rabbi Meir, Ka'amar, V'lei Lo Svirlek, Enochanami. He's saying, in the position of Rabbi Meir, either you hold a Rav and Shmuel, or you don't hold a Rav and Shmuel. You can't have this Rabbi Ami thing where you have it halfway on and halfway off. It either is or isn't in the sheet of Rabbi Meir. But by the way, I don't hold like Rabbi Meir at all. I hold like Rabbi Yossi, and who says, Yachloku. So that's the way to explain Rav Nachman's position. Now, Gemara is going to come back to this, but you have an interesting issue that's going to arise here with regards to the halacha now, and we'll discuss it once we get further into the Gemara. Meiti Rav Hoshaya. Meita, if she passed away, Yorsheah maskrimit ktubata ad 25 shanim. There is a statute of limitations for the collection of a ktubah up to 25 years. The Chachamim say, if the woman hasn't collected in 25 years her ktubah, we assume one of two things. Either she's eaten enough or taken enough from the estate that her ktubah has been eaten up and we don't worry about the ktubah anymore. Or we say machla, that she's forgiven her ktubah. And so there is this statute of limitations. But here it says, meita, she passed away, your sheha, her inheritors, maskirim nektubata, adesirim v'chamei shanim, can come and make a claim against the estate for 25 years. Now that's problematic based on what you're saying in Rav and Shmuel, that you can't be morish a shvuah. She had an obligation to take a shvuah in order to collect her ktubah. Now that she passed away, the yorshim have to take a shvuah in order to collect the ktubah. How can they do that if the obligation stemmed from their mother who passed away? She already took the shvuah, and then she passed away. So then she's already made it into a monetary obligation or inheritance, and that she can pass to her kids, because she took care of the issue of the shvuah before she had passed away. Tashma, nasa rishona umeita. He married the first woman, and she passes away. Nasa shnia, then he marries the second woman, umeitu, and then he passes away. Shnia v'yorsheha kudmim v'yorsheha rishona. The second wife and her inheritors take precedence over the yorshei rishona, the inheritors of the first wife. Now, in terms of the first wife, she predeceased her husband. She predeceased her husband, she has no right to her ketubah. Her possessions go to her husband. Her husband inherits her in that case. So truthfully, there's nothing for her to pass through Yorshim, except for the fact that the Chachamim instituted what's called ketubat b'nin dichrin, which is that the male children of this woman will collect her ketubah in the priority of the inheritance that goes to the children in this estate. So here, if you had boys from the first woman, and he had boys from the second woman, they technically should split the Yerusha evenly between them because they're all brothers through the father. The Chachamim instituted that before they split it evenly between them, they will divide up the mother's ketubot of the estate. So that means that the children of the first wife have a right to collect her ketubah against the estate before they split the estate evenly with the brothers from the second wife. What the Braita tells you is that the second wife has precedence over here because she is entitled to her ketubah me'ikar hadin, because he predeceased her. So therefore, they're entitled to take their ketubah. Shnia v'yorsha kodmim. They take the right first, because midoraita, the husband inherited the first wife. And now the second yorshim can go ahead and take their ketubah first. If there's what's left over, then the yorshei rishona can come and collect their ketubah. And if there's left over beyond that, they'll split it between them as even brothers because of the fact that here you're not being oker Yerusha d'oraita. But what you see is that the Yorshim have a right to collect from the estate. Now with regards to the second wife, when she was alive, she had a right to collect her ketubah. And then her Yorsheha, her inheritors, are coming to collect on her behalf. How are they coming to collect on her behalf if she owed a shvuah to the estate in order to walk away with her ketubah? So over here, she is chayevet eshvuah, and then when she passes away, how is it that they can come and collect? For the first wife, it's not a problem. She predeceased the husband. In that case, she owed no shvuah in order to collect, because he was still alive, the husband, at that time, and therefore her yitomim can collect, and they don't need a shvuah technically in order to collect. But the second wife, who survived the husband, then she's a creditor, where the loveh passed away or predeceased the creditor. She's a creditor. The husband was the debtor. He predeceased her. She owes a shvuah to the estate in order to get her collection. And then when she passes away, we're saying Yorsheha have a right to collect over here. So again, what are you going to say? Hakanami shenishba umeita. She took the shvuah before she passed away. And therefore, that shvuah made it into a monetary obligation that can be passed to the Yorshim. Tashma. Aval Yorshav Mashbim Ota Vet Yorsheha Vet Abayim Birshuta. So this goes to a Mishnah in Ketubot. They're not quoting you the first part of the Mishnah, they just quote you the end of the Mishnah. But the first part of the Mishnah is that a husband makes a commitment to his wife when he marries her. Katav La Neder Ushva Enli Alayich Val Yorshayich. He says that I have no right to demand of you or your inheritors to take a neder or shvuah. So that means that she has a right of collection of her ketubah without having to do anything, without any shvuah. Who eno chol ashbia? He doesn't have a right to make her take a shvuah, not her, and not her yorshim. That's what's stipulated in the ketubah or in the contract between them. But if he passes away, his yorshim have a right to demand a shvuah because he was only bound by this agreement. His yorshim are not bound by this agreement. So the case here is, Yorshav mashbi'im ota. The Yorshim have a right to make her take a shvuah. Ve'et Yorshav ve'et habayim birshuta. But whether it's her or her inheritors that are coming in her place, the Yorshim have a right to demand a shvuah from them. Again, here you have a problem, which is mashbi'im ota, we understand. They can demand a shvuah from her. But then et Yorshav, how can you demand a shvuah from Yorshav? She already was obligated in that shvuah once the husband passed away, and the Yorshim entered the picture because they weren't bound by the agreement between the husband and wife. Therefore, the husband's Yorshim could have demanded a shvuah from her. They can demand a shvuah from her, then ve'et Yorshah. Why can they demand a shvuah from the Yorshim? They're inheriting that shvuah from their mother. You want to see over here that she took the shvuah already? We know she didn't because it says, Gershim Mashbiyin Ota, that they can make her take the Shvuah. So if they can make her take a Shvuah, it means she hasn't taken the Shvuah. And it says that they can make their Yershim take a Shvuah. That goes against Rav and Shmuel. It sounds like here, they're passing their obligation, the Shvuah, from the mother to the Yershim. And Rav Shmaya, that's the Dadim Tani. You're reading it all as one case here in that Mishnah. There are two cases. Ota ba'almana. The case of Ota is where she is a widow. And since she is a widow, then she takes the Shvuah to collect. V'yorsha b'grusha. The case of Yorsha is a case where it was a divorce. So now, in the divorce, she's entitled to her ketubah in order to collect it. But over there, the husband is still alive. So when the husband's still alive, there's no obligation to take a Shvuah. When she passes away now, she passes her ketubah to her children without an obligation of a Shvuah. Since her ex-husband is precluded from asking her for a Shvuah, and then after she passes away, from asking her Yorshim for a Shvuah. But then, when the ex-husband passes away, the Yorshim have to take a Shvuah just because they are Yorshim. So they'll take that Shvuah that our mother didn't tell us anything about it being paid, and then they'll be able to collect from the estate or the Yorshim of the ex-husband. So he basically bifurcates the din there and says it's not all one case. It's not a case where she didn't take a Shvuah and then the Yorshim can't take a Shvuah. No, it's a case either where she has to take a Shvuah because she's a widow, or it's a case where she was a divorcee and there was no obligation to make Shvuah. Then when she passes away, Yorshim take a Shvuah like anybody would take a Shvuah to take from Yutomim. But it's not because they're inheriting a Shvuah from her, they're inheriting money from her, a good claim on credit from her, and that they're allowed to do. Meitiv Rav Natan Bar Hoshaya. Wait a minute. We have a different statement that seems to undermine that. Yafet koach haben mikoach haav. The son has more power than the father. Sheben goveh ben bishvuah ben shelo bishvuah. Because the son has a right to collect with a shvuah and without a shvuah. Va'av eno goveh elo bishvuah. On the other hand, the father always has to take a shvuah. Heichi domi. What's the case here? The mate loveh b'chayim malveh. If it's a case where the debtor predeceases the malveh, ve'aktani sheben goveh ben bishvuah ben shelo bishvuah. It says there that the son takes it with a shvuah, without a shvuah. Bishvuah, what's the shvuah he's taking? Shvuah to Yorshim. Shelo bishvuah, what's the case where he doesn't have to take a shvuah? Ki Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. That would be like the position of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. You remember from the Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says that in a case where we have a deem, that the father on the deathbed said that he never collected this money, then the Yorshim don't have to take a shvuah. So if they have a deem that on the deathbed this person declared that he wasn't paid yet, the Yorshim don't have to take a shvuah. So what's the situation? Again, the loveh predeceases the malveh. The malveh now owes the Yorshim a shvuah. Then the malveh passes away, and his Yorshim have an obligation to take a shvuah that seemingly stems from their father. And we say in that case that they can collect bishvuah and shelo bishvuah. They can collect. Sometimes they need a shvuah. Sometimes they don't need a shvuah. The case where they don't need a shvuah is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, where the father declared to Edim that he wasn't paid, then they don't need a shvuah. But it means that in the case where they don't have that, they would take a shvuah. Which shvuah are they taking? Shvuah that Yorshim. And despite the fact they're taking shvuah that Yorshim, we're saying they can collect, even though their father was chayav a shvuah beforehand. So that shows you that the father can pass a shvuah to his children. And again, this would upend the position of Rav and Shmuel. My answer is, I'm Rav Yosef Hamani Beit Shemayhi. The author of that braita is Beit Shemayhi. Damri shtar ho me de gvot ki gavui domi. That a shtar that is standing for collection is considered as if collected. Over here they speak about a case of a woman who was accused by her husband of being a sota. And now they go up to give her the mayim hamiarim in the migdash, and the husband passes away. So over there, we don't give her the mayim hamiarim because it says that the husband has to bring her and stand her before the kohanim. The husband's not there. He can't do that. The question is, what's her entitlement to the ketubah in that case? Machloket Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Hillel says that you don't get the ketubah because there's suspicion with regards to her entitlement to the ketubah, because if she had an extramarital affair, she would have lost her ketubah. And since we don't have any evidence anymore, the evidence points towards a problem. She can't take the ketubah because a motzi mi chaveiro alav araya, and she has no proof that she's innocent. She can't drink the water. And this is safek, because her husband accused her of being a sota. So that safek now takes away her ability to collect her ketubah, and she loses that according to Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai, on the other hand, says she gets her ketubah, because she's already considered to be muhzeket in the ketubah. It's already that she has the ketubah, because shtar made the gavot ki gavui domi. A shtar that is ready for collection is considered as if collected. Her ketubah is always sitting there, ready to be collected, because she has a lien on all her husband's possessions and property, and it's as if she collected her ketubah already. That means that the burden of proof is the other way around. She has the ketubah as if collected, and if the children want to say that you're not entitled to it, they have to bring a proof that she had an extramarital affair. In that case, the safek will make it that it sits with her, because she's considering the possessor of the ketubah, not the children of the husband. According to Beit Hillel, it's the children of the husband, and therefore the burden of proof is on her. According to Beit Shammai, because it's as if collected, the burden of proof is on the children, because she is the one who's considered to be in possession of it. Similarly, over here, when the shtar that the malvish shows up with, we look at the shtar as if collected, meaning that we look at it as if it's already in the possession of the malvish, of the creditor, and therefore when he passes away, he's not passing an intangible object to his children, he's passing a tangible monetary obligation to his children. Now, in the case where it's father's alive, the malvah, the creditor's alive, he'll have to take the shvuah that's relevant to him in order to free that money totally, because there's an obligation meet to Rabbanan to take a shvuah. In the case where he passes away and it's Yerushim are coming, since he, it's as if collected, he passed them in a monetary obligation, they now have that money, but again, the Chachamim imposed a shvuah. So they'll take the shvuah that's incumbent upon them, which is shvuah that Yerushim. But in that way, it does not undermine Rav and Shmuel, because Rav and Shmuel are speaking within the position of Beit Hillel, where it's not considered as if collected. When it's not as if collected, then you have this intangible shvua that you can't pass, and that means that you can't get the Yerushim to take the shvua that the father needed to take, and they never get the money. According to Beit Shammai, where it's as if collected, he's passing them a monetary material possession that just has a little condition attached to it, just you gotta take a shvua. They get the money, and then they take the shvua that's incumbent upon them, which is shvua to Yerushim, and they collect it. So this braita will not undermine that position of Rab and Shmuel. Ikla Rab Nachman the Surah. Rab Nachman went to Surah. All the Gabe Rab Chista, Rabba Bar Rab Huna. So Rab Chista and Rabba Bar Huna came to see him when he had come to Surah. Amrulei, Leite Mar, Neakra Lahadar Rabu Shmuel. So they come and basically ask Rab Nachman to undermine or take Rab and Shmuel off the books. I came all that distance from Mechuzah in order to undermine the position of Rav and Shmuel. Let us say that we're not going to add on to it. So basically what Rav Nachman is to do, and you see this in modern day Poskim, you see this in Rav Moshe Alat, Rav Moshe Feinstein, when he gives Pesukei Halacha, when he looks at a Takana Derabanan or Gzeira Derabanan, he says, let's not expand the Gzeira Derabanan. Let's limit it to the scope it's in, and we're not going to expand it. That's one of his tshuvot with regards to kidiot, where he says that peanut oil should be mutar on Pesach. He says it's enough that the Gzeira is about kidiot. They never spoke about derivatives of kidiot like oil. So now, why are you going to ask for peanut oil? When peanuts themselves, it's already questionable whether they're captured under that takana or Gzeira of kidiot. He says, we have what we have in the Gzeira. Don't expand it beyond those borders. Rav Moshe Feinstein was not accepted in this case, but it is the psak that he gave in America in that time, and back in those days, people did use peanut oil based on Rav Moshe, but generally today, no kosher organization would do that. But you see from Moshe the same thing that Rav Nachman is saying over here. Listen, we have a position of Rav and Shmuel. We can't go and undermine them. Remember, Rav Nachman is a Talmid Muvak of Shmuel. It's his Rebbe. He's not willing to undermine what his Rebbe said or what his Rebbe instituted. So he says, listen, we have Rav and Shmuel. You may not like it. You may not agree with it. But let's limit the scope to the cases in which they spoke. We will not extrapolate it to other cases. He says, I'm not willing to undermine it, but I'm willing to limit the scope of the Takana. You're going, my. What are examples of the limitation of the scope? A person who agrees that he received a partial payment for his shtar and then passes away. Yoshim nishbaim shvata yoshim v'notlim. In that case, the yoshim take the shvua and they are notel. Because remember, the case of Rav and Shmuel was the case where Chen Yitomim, Mina Yitomim, Lo Yifruah B'Shvuah. Yitomim from Yitomim can only do it with a Shvuah. So their case, or where Rav and Shmuel made their comment, can't be Morish Shvuah, is when you're talking about a Shvuah that is Yitomim to Yitomim. Over here, that's not the case. The creditor says, I received partial payment of the document. And then he dies. The debtor is still alive in this case. Then the Yorshim, the inheritors of the creditor, Nishbayim Shvuah Yorshim Notlim, they take a Shvuah and collect. Because in that case, it's not Yitomim from Yitomim. It's Yitomim from the debtor. And Yitomim from the debtor, even though there's an obligation of Pogim Shtaro to take a Shvuah, in that case, we will not say that that Shvuah cannot be passed. We'll allow it to be passed because Rav and Shmuel didn't speak in that case. How the Shochiv, so there was an individual passed away, the Shavik Arva, but he did leave behind a guarantor. Sover a Papa Lameimar, the Papa thought to say, Hanami de lo loshi falahu. Papa said, maybe Rav and Shmuel should not apply here as well. Now, the case is where the debtor predeceased the creditor. That means that the creditor now owes a Shvuah to the Yitomim. And then the creditor passed away. His sons, according to Rav and Shmuel, cannot inherit the Shvuah that they need to take. And that means that they're not going to be able to collect. So what did the children do? The children say, we're not going to go after the Loveh. We can't go after the Loveh because we can't take the Shvuah that our father was obligated in. We're going to go after the guarantor. And then we'll collect through the guarantor. And when we collect through the guarantor, that'll be a different situation or a different case than Rav and Shmuel spoke about. Rav and Shmuel spoke about collecting from Yitomim of the debtor. Over here, we're going after the guarantor. So Rav Papa says, maybe this doesn't fit under Rav Yishmael, and therefore we should allow them to take Shvuah and Yerushim and collect from the guarantor. Amar le Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua, the Rav Papa. So Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua says to Rav Papa, I don't think so. Atu Arva la Batayatme Azil. There's a transitive property over here. As soon as the children of the creditor go after the guarantor, where's his next stop? His next stop is with the debtor's children. Because the guarantor says, if I have to pay out, he's going to go after the debtor to get paid back for what he had to lay out and is guaranteeing. So then he says, it's basically see-through. When you, as the children of the creditor, go after the guarantor, and the guarantor is going to go after the children of the debtor, then in essence what's happening here is the children of the creditor are going after the children of the debtor. So in that case, you have a problem because it really is Rav and Shmuel now. In essence, if you look at what's happening here through the transitive property, is that the creditor's children are going after the debtor's children. And that is the case of Rav and Shmuel. Since they can't take the Shvuah, they won't inherit. Just because you stink a guarantor in between doesn't change the fact that it's Yitomim in a Yitomim. You're just taking one step away from it. You're just saying, no, the creditor will take it from the guarantor, and then the guarantor takes it from the debtor. That's the equivalent of them taking it straight from each other. Ha'ush b'shochiv, another guy passed away, b'shavak acha, and he left behind a brother. No children, but a brother that inherited him. Maybe this is a case where Rav and Shmuel's din will not apply. They spoke about Yitomim from Yitomim. They didn't speak about a case of a brother from Yitomim. So again, here it's a case where the debtor predeceased the creditor. The creditor now owes a Shvuah to the Yitomim of the debtor. He passes away now, and his brother inherits him. His brother obviously can't take the Shvuah that his brother had to take, the creditor had to take, but he's also a brother, not a child. This is not the case of Yitomim from Yitomim. And so maybe it doesn't include it under that rubric of Rav and Shmuel. Amalei Rova, Mali Shalom Pogdani Abba, Mali Shalom Pogdani Achi. Why does it make a difference? Yitomim and the brother are in the same predicament. The reason that the Yitomim cannot take the Shvuah of their father is because the only Shvuah that they can take is Shvuah Tayoshim, which is, my father didn't command me that he paid it, it was paid already. That means that they can't replicate the Shvuah that their father needed to take, and that means all they can take is Shvuah Tayoshim. The brother has the same position. The only Shvuah the brother can take is, my brother didn't tell me it was paid. He can't take a Shvuah saying it wasn't paid. He wasn't a party to the transaction, just like the children were. And that means that he's no different than Yitomim. He's in the exact same position of Yitomim. And this is similar enough or exactly alike the case of Rav and Shmuel. And Rav and Shmuel's din would apply here as well. So Amar Rav Chama, Hashta de lo itmar yuchata lo ki Rav Shmuel. Now that we don't have any psak halacha, not like Rav and Shmuel, velo ki Rabbi Elazar, and not like Rabbi Elazar. Remember, Rabbi Elazar disagreed with Rabbi Shmuel and either said that we have to limit the scope of what they're speaking about, or basically he is arguing outright with them and saying that you just take Shvuah that you're Shem and everything goes well. That means that he disagrees with Rabbi Shmuel. So now the Gemara says we didn't come to a conclusion. Is the halacha like Rabbi Shmuel? Or is the halacha like Rabbi Elazar? Now, what's interesting over here, and many of the Rishonim point this out, that the Gemara here says the machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Elazar. What happened to Rabbi Abba? Remember, in yesterday's daf, we had Naska to Rabbi Abba, and in Naska to Rabbi Abba, he says, a person who can't take a Shvuah, mitoch she'enu choli shavah, mishalim. Since you can't take the Shvuah, you pay. And we saw yesterday in the Bali at Tosafot, and others point this out, that Rabbi Abba's din applies to both cases. It applies to the case where you have to take a Shvuah to be patur. If you don't take the Shvuah, you're going to pay. It also applies in a case where you're a Toveya, when you're a claimant, and you have to take a Shvuah. If you can't take that Shvuah, pay. Not you, the person who owes the money is going to have to pay. The defendant has to pay in this case. Even though the Chachamim imposed upon you a Shvuah, nevertheless, if you can't take the Shvuah, you're going to pay. Rabbi Elazar sounds exactly like Rabbi Abba. So the question in the Gemara all through this is, why is Rabbi Abba not mentioned and only Rabbi Elazar? Which is a interesting question when it comes to the Psak Halacha. So now Rabbi Kama says, now that we don't have the Halacha, not like Rabbi Shmuel, not like Rabbi Elazar, if a Dayan paskins like Rabbi Shmuel, what's done is done. And if you paskin like Rabbi Elazar, that'll also be good. I mean, both are considered to be valid options. Amar Papa, hai shtore diatme. In a situation in which we have a shtar from Yitomim, lo mikra karinene, v'lo agvoye magvinene. We don't rip it up. We also don't collect on it. Agvoye lo magvinene. We don't collect on it. Dilma sfirlan karabu Shmuel. Because maybe we paskin like Rabbi Shmuel. Mikra lo karinene. We don't rip it up. Because if a Dayan chooses to pass like Rabbi Elazar, once he does that, it is binding and we don't undermine it. So the shtar can be used to collect, depending on which Dayan you get. So depending on which Beit Din you end up in, you'll end up in a Beit Din that passes like Rabbi Shmuel, can't collect it. End up in a Beit Din that passes like Rabbi Elazar, then you will be able to collect it. So the shtar now lives in no man's land. We're not going to rip it up, but we also won't allow collection on it. How dayono, David Rabbi Elazar. There was a dayan that paskin like Rabbi Elazar. How about surmer b'rabano mematye? There was a young Tamar Chochum, young whippersnapper Tamar Chochum in his city. Amale, aitina igrata mimarova delayed hilchotag Rabbi Elazar. I'll bring you a letter from Eretz Yisrael that says the locha is not like Rabbi Elazar. Amale, so the dayan in the city says, l'chitaiti. When you bring it, I'll change my mind. You get the letter, and then I'll change my mind. After the Kamei de Rav Chama, this young Talmid Chacham went before Rav Chama, basically to complain about the fact that this Dayan was not paying heed to him, and basically he's pushing him off and saying, go bring the letter. Amalei, Dayono, David Rav Elazar, Avod. He says, that's the Locha. The Locha is, if you pass it like Rav Elazar, the Psak Locha stands. And so, doesn't matter that maybe you think, or in Eretz Yisrael, they said the Locha is not like Rav Elazar. We paskin that if a Dayan does take the position of Rabbi Elazar, that that position is binding in the case, and you don't have to undermine it. And that's what this Dayan was doing. And even if you bring the letter, he's not going to change his mind, because once you paskin like Rabbi Elazar, you do not have to undermine it. So now that brings us to the question of, what is the Psak Halacha over here? How do we deal with this Gemara? So the Rif over here explains what he thinks the Halacha is. The Rif says, Rav Chisda and Rabbi Baravuna came to undermine Rabbi Shmuel, and Rav Nachman refused to do so, and he just said that we're going to limit the scope of the din of Rabbi Shmuel. And then we saw Rav Papa, and Ravuna Brave Rav Shuda, and Rami Barchama, and Rovo, all of those Amoraim who are Batshraininu, they all believe, like Rav Nachman, that Rabbi Shmuel is in place. We just limit the scope of Rabbi Shmuel. That means the locha is like Rabbi Shmuel. What about Rabbi Chama, who said that since the locha wasn't passing either way, despite that statement of Rabbi Chama, it's not an open choice. We pass in like Rabbi Shmuel. But if you pass him like Rabbi Elazar, we will not undermine it. But that is only b'diavad. It's not like we read in the Gemara where Rav Chama seems to offer the option l'chatchila in either direction, which is what seems to be the conclusion of the Gemara. When he went to Rav Chama to ask about this dayan and paskin like Rav Elazar, sounds like it's an open option to you which way you go. The Harif says that's not the case. We paskin l'chatchila k'Rav and Shmuel. Rav Elazar, if b'diavad you did it, we're not going to undermine it. But then, if you look in the Baal Amor on the Rif, he already raises a serious issue, which is, since Rav Nachman paskin like Rav Yossi, which is, Yachloku, Michlau delo svirle, the Rav Shmuel. That makes it sound like he doesn't hold the Rav Shmuel. Because we saw in the Gemara that he said that Rav Shmuel is all according to Rabbi Meir. But Rav Nachman himself paskin like Rav Yossi of Yachloku. If that's the case, it seems like Rav Nachman does not subscribe to this position of Rav and Shmuel. The Baal Amor says, I don't understand. Ashrei iti, Rav Moshe, Rav Yossi, Shperish, Lashon Hazeh, Veha Amar, Rav Yossi, Rav Nui, Abad Rav Nachman, Ubdak, Rav Yossi, Tamar Yochloku. Ama, Svir Lake, Rav Shmuel. That the Gemara asks, Veha, didn't he paskin like Rav Yossi? And that implies that he holds like Rav and Shmuel. And that the only case where he says Yachloku is in a case where there's a shvua that's incumbent on both parties. Hatam Yachloku in the case where you have a shvua that was flipped from one party to the other party and then the other party can't take the shvua. Lefisha shvua mutelat al shnehem. Because both of them have an obligation of a shvua. Shvua do right al zeh. The one who is supposed to take the shvua to be patur is a shvua do right al to release himself if he's a modeh b'miksat. But we flipped it on the other side because he was a chashud and he has a shvua derabanan. Since both of them can't do this or take this shvua, then they have to split it between them or they are both penalized for that. And he says that uperish na'ehu. It's a very nice explanation. But in the end he says ulinyan psak halachot. It comes to the psak halacha. We can't back away from what the Rif says, and therefore the chatchila of dinin k'rabu Shmuel b'chol shtar she'ein bo ne'manut. Therefore, we will paskin the chatchila like Rabbi Shmuel in any shtar that doesn't have ne'manut and you need a shvua. But shtar she'ein bo ne'manut lo be'kinim be'tzei kule. Then we're not going to put two kulot on it. The kuba the Abba Sha'ol ben Ema Miriam ukulot the Rabbi Shmuel the chatchila. In that case, if it is a shtar that already has ne'manut, we're going to paskin like Rabbi Elazar. That's the right way to give the psak alocha. That's the right alocha. And you can rely on it. And as you can imagine, the Ramban in the Milchamot Hashem has a lot to say about that idea or that psak of the Baal Amor. And the Ramban concludes, Hilkach of Nachman Damar Yachloku, Lo svirle the Rabbi Abba b'shum dochta. That he who says chayachloku cannot hold the Rabbi Abba at all. Elishmamina asavar of Nachman leited the Rabbi Shmuel. And he also obviously believes that Rabbi Shmuel are not applicable. That means that Rabbi Nachman doesn't hold the Rabbi Abba and doesn't hold the Rabbi Shmuel. Ela, svirle kosheni yucholi shava shvat chachamim. Anybody who can't take a shvat chachamim. Vilito, ukme adina do raita. Goes back to the din do raita. Which actually is similar to Rabbi Abba's position, but then Gabe Chushudim came in Dikar Dine Bidoraita Namish Buahi Chokim. But since by Chashudim, since the Ikar Din derives from a Doraita over there, if neither of them can take the Shua, we don't push it back to the Din Doraita, but rather we make both of them pay in essence or a Cholek. And therefore, like the Rif, we don't paskin like Rabbi Nachman about Yachloku Elok Rabbi Abba.
And once you have rejected Rav Nachman, you also now have accepted Rav and Shmuel. Because the person who rejected Rav and Shmuel in the sugya was Rav Nachman. Once you've eliminated Rav Nachman because Rabbi Abba rules, in this case according to the Rif, then you've also, in essence, accepted the shita of Rav and Shmuel. And that explains the psak of the Rif.
And if you remember yesterday, we discussed the way that the Rabbeinu Tam tried to reconcile between this problem that Rav Nachman seemingly holds like Rabbi Yossi. And that's where we said yesterday, therefore the Rabbeinu Tam believes that we pass him like Rabbi Abba against the position of Rabbi Shmuel, or basically like Rabbi Elazar against the position of Rabbi Shmuel. And that means if you can't take a shvua, then you pay. And that's even in a situation where the toveya can't take the shvua, then the defendant still has to pay in that case. Rabbi Lozer does impose upon that shvata yoshim. So maybe you have to take a shvata yoshim, but you still be able to collect. And the case of Rabbi Yossi, where he says chokim, is unique by the case of chashud ha-shvua. Rabbi Natan says it was a knas. It was a penalty imposed on the individual because he was chashud ha-shvua, and therefore couldn't take the shvua. And so you see the Baal Yed Tosfot, Rabbi Natan, passing against the rif, and saying that the locha is like Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Elazar, along with the inclusion of Rabbi Nachman passing like Rabbi Yossi, and not like Rabbi Shmuel, the way the rif suggests, based on the fact that Rabbi Nachman and all these Batraim seem to support Rab and Shmuel. All right, now the Gemara moves on to the last case in the Mishnah, which is Ve'elu Nishpa'im. These are people who force a Shvua. So now the Gemara says over there that the Mishnah says you don't need a Ta'ana in order to take a Shvua. Atu b'shuftani askina? Are we dealing with fools over here where the guy comes along and says, give me a Shvua, and the other party is going to take a Shvua? How can you demand a shvua for no reason whatsoever? Gemara says, "Achi kamar ve'elu nishpa'im shelo b'tanat bari elo b'tanat shema." These are the individuals who take a shvua when the claim is only a maybe claim, even though it's not a vadai or a bari claim. Over here, they're not saying we know for sure you stole. Not for sure we know that you did something untoward in the partnership. We just have our suspicions that you did something. Those suspicions are enough of a reason to demand a shvua. We saw that by partnerships, we saw that by arisim, sharecroppers, by a woman who is no seven or ten, but by it, one of the brothers who takes care of the estate on behalf of the other brothers. All the parties there have a right to demand of those individuals to take a shvua if they have any suspicions that arise as to their integrity. The shutafim arisim, the people who have this din are shutafim partners, arisim, sharecroppers. Tana ben bayit shamru, lo shiniknas v'yotzei b'raglav, that the next individual was a ben bayit who took care of the estate. We're not speaking about someone who has open access to the house or to the estate. Ela machnis lo po'alim, umotzi lo po'alim, machnis lo peirot, umotzi lo peirot. Talking about someone who has the right to transact on behalf of the estate. It's not someone who has access to the estate, you can force them to take a shvua, that they didn't take anything. No, it's someone who's actively involved in transacting on behalf of the estate, hiring workers, firing workers, selling payroll, bringing payroll in, that's the individual you can force to take a shvua in this case. Umayshna hani. So why are these individuals subject to this shvua of Shema? Mishum demoro ba heter. This is what we spoke about in the Mishnah, because they justify to themselves that they're entitled to take it. They're doing this service, quote unquote, for the household, whether that means that the woman is doing it on behalf of her husband and taking care of the whole household and the estate, and she's transacting, she says, I'm not getting paid for that. So I'm not getting paid for that. I could take a little bit for myself. I'm not getting paid. The brother is doing it on behalf of all the estate and all the other brothers. He's not getting paid. So he says, I justified myself to take it. The shutaf over here, the partnership, the active partner says, I'm doing all the work and the other guy is benefiting. So I should get take something or I should get paid for it. From this, you look up in the Baal Yed Tosafot, Pasuk Rabbeinu Tam, the milveh lachmachatzit tzkar, if you lend money to get return on the half of the profits, en yechola hashbio, you can't force a shvua, the kevin de lokeach tzkar amalo, lo mori hetero. If you remember the setup that the Gemara speaks about in Bava Metzia to avoid rebeat, in a case where you hand over 50% of you, what you're giving him as equity, 50% as debt, in order that you now are 50-50 partners in the business, so that you both will profit from it. Over there, we said that the person who receives it, who's going to be the active partner, cannot do that unless he gets compensated for his active duties. Because if you don't compensate it from him, it's imputed interest, or effectively interest on the loan. You lent him money, you gave him equity, and now he's servicing the loan by providing services to you by doing the active engagement in the partnership, in the active partner, and investing on behalf of the partnership. So if he doesn't get paid for that, you've effectively collected interest on your debt. The Rabbeinu Dan points out is if it's structured properly and he gets paid for his services, then there's no reason to believe that he's more ahead there. He's not going to say, oh, I did this for free, I'm owed money. He's getting paid for the active side of what he's doing. And if that's the case, then there's no more ahead there, and there's no reason that you should have to be able to demand a shvua from him in that case. Amar Rav Yosef bar Yume, Amar Rav Nachman, Bo Shesh Tana Beinayu Shtei Kesef. And even though it's a Shema claim, we still want it to conform as much as possible to your normal trappings of a Shvua. That means that the claim has to be a minimum of 2 Kesef, Shtei Ma'a Kesef. Rashi goes as far as to say, V'zeh Modelo B'mitzah T'krova Hi L'Shvua Doraita El Shetana Shema Hi. That we have to get as close as possible to a Shvua Doraita. Not only do you need a Tana of that threshold, but it has to be a Modu B'mitzah. Whereas the Rimi Gash and the Rambam and others believe that you don't need the Modu B'mitzah, you just need the threshold of the Tana to make the Tana significant enough that the Shema can precipitate a Shvua. Come on, that sounds like Shmuel. Remember we had the machlok between Rav and Shmuel in the Mishnah as to whether the claim needs to be Shtei Kesef or the denial has to be Shtei Kesef. From there, it sounds like it's the claim that has to be 2 Kesef. V'ha'atani Rabbi Chia, M'siyuei L'Rav, doesn't Rabbi Chia have a braita that seems to support Rav's position? Eima Kfirat Tana. Don't say that it has to be a Tana of Shtei Kesef, but rather Kfirat Tana. It has to be the denial of a claim of Shtei Kesef, and obviously the claim would have to be a pruta above that. But either way, it's enough to conform to the general rubric of the Shvua. The only thing you're missing over here is that it's a Shema claim instead of a Bari claim. Chalku Ashutvim Arisim. Once they break up the partnership or the sharecropping agreement, then you can't force the Shvua. Yibailo Ma'o L'Galgel B'Dirabanan. Are you allowed to do Gilgul Shvua when you have a Shvua D'Rabanan? So here the question is that we know that Gilgul Shvua is Midoraita. We learned that already from Sota, Rabbi Ma'isha, Amen, Amen. Amen on this and Amen on other things, which shows you that there is Gilgul Shvua Midoraita. Question is that only true when you have a Shvua Midoraita that you can be Megalgel other Shvuot on top of it? But if the Chachamim instituted a Shvua, can then you take that Shvua D'Rabbanan and parlay it into other Shvuot, meaning even bring in Shvua Midoraita? The party is only obligated Shvua D'Rabbanan to you. Can you then force him to take Shvuot Doraita on top of that? Or even other Shvuot Rabbanan? Tashma. Lavai menu, Erev Shvi'it. He borrowed the money on the year before the Shemitah. Ola Motzei Shvi'it, Naselo Shutaf Oraris. And on Motzei Shvi'it, they became partners or sharecropper agreement between them. Ein Migalgalin. You're not allowed to be Migalgel the Shvua. Taima, the Lava menu, Erev Shvi'it. The reason he can't be Megalgel the Shvua is because the loan took place on Erev Shemitah, on the year before the Shemitah, Dat Shvi'it Avkate. And the Shvi'it comes along and wipes out not only the loan, but the Shvua, we're going to see in a second. From this you would imply, Hashar Shnei Shavua, it was any time besides the Shemitah, Megalgelin, you would have been able to be Megalgel. What they're trying to point out from the Braita is, the Braita says if you lend the money Erev Shvi'it, then, when it comes to the Shvi'it wipes out the loan, and it wipes out the Shvua, if he denied having to owe the loan, and now he owes a Shvua, whether it's a Shvua Taseit, or is a Modu B'Mikzat, because Shvua Taseit didn't exist yet in the Mea Tanaim, so that Shvua Toda B'Mikzat is wiped out by the Shvi'it as well. So now, the reason that you can't go back, once you have a relationship of a Shutaf, a relationship in Aris, and force him to take the Shvua that he was obligated to Modu B'Mikzat is because Shemitah wiped it out. But that implies, underlying, we would have let you do it. We would have let you take the Shvua of the Shutaf and parlay it into a Shvua Modu B'Mikzat, or that of an Aris, and parlay it into a Shvua Modu B'Mikzat. That means that we're allowing you to take a Shvua D'Rabbanan, and then be Megalgel on top of that, the Shvua D'Oraita of a Modu B'Mikzat. The only impediment here was Shemitah was in the way. And that's what the Gemara says. That implies Bishar Shnei Shvuah Megalgelin. It says, "Well, the inference you're making is incorrect." Lo Tema Har Shnei Shnei Shvuah Megalgelin. Don't say the inference is that the remaining years you keep him Megalgel. Elema Naselo Shutaf Aris. The case that you can infer where it's the opposite way around is the case where he was a Shutaf and Aris Erev Shvi'it. They were partners Arisim and Erev Shvi'it. Ola Motze Shvi'it Lavai Menu. And then a Motze Shvi'it he borrowed money from him. Megalgelin. In that case, you can be Megalgel. Because over there, you have Modu B'Mikzat afterwards, which is a Shvua D'Oraita. And then you can be Megalgel, the Shvua, the Aris, and the Shutaf from before Shvi'it. And the Chiddush is that the Shvi'it does not wipe out the Shvua of the Aris or the Shutaf. The Gemara says, Ha, Behejek Tonila. That is written explicitly. Naselo Shutaf Aris, Erev Shvi'it. O Lemotze Shvi'it, Lava Menu, Megalgelin. That's written explicitly in the Braita. You don't need to infer that from the first statement of the Braita. That means that what you're left inferring from the first statement of the Braita is, it's only because Shemitah wiped out the Shvu'ah that was associated with the loan, that you can't be Megalgel. But had it not been for Shemitah, we would allow you to be Megalgel or Shvu'ah. That means even a Shvu'ah de Rabbanan of Shutafim or Arisin could then bring along with it a Shvu'ah and obligate the individual. Take a Shvu'ah mode of mix that a Shvu'ah deoraita, Shmamina, Megalgelim, de Rabbanan, Shmamina. The conclusion is that even by a Shvu'ah de Rabbanan, we allow you to be Megalgel other Shvu'ot along with it, including Shvu'ot deoraita. Amar Rav Huna. The Chol Migalgalin Chutz Misachir She'en Migalgalin. So we'll explain it now according to Rashi, which is that Rashi says that you can't be Migalgal on any Shvuat Rabbanan with the exception of a Shvuat Sachir. The Shvuat the Sachir is only Lahapis Datosho Balabai. Technically, he should have been able to collect without a Shvuat. The only reason we make the Sachir take a Shvuat to collect his wages is because we want to placate the Balabai. And so what Rashi says is, that is not enough of a reason then to roll over the other Shvuot on top of him. He's only taking it to help out the Baal Bayit, Apis Datosho Baal Bayit. He's not really obligated in the Shvuah. So then you can't be Megalgel a Shvuah on top of that. We're not Mekil by any Shvuah except the Shvuah Sachir. The Mekilim, there we are Mekil. And Rashi says that they're saying exactly the same thing, that you can be Megalgel on other Shvuot, which means that we're not Mekil, that you don't have to take other Shvuot by any Shvuot Rabbanan, with the exception of the Shvuah of the Sachir. So if that's the case, Ma Binayu. If they're saying the same thing, just in different language, what's the Nafkamina between them? Ikebenayu liftoachlo. According to Rashi, the Nafkamina between them is whether Beit Din enters into the fray. Does Beit Din suggest that you're Megalgel Shvuah? Or does Beit Din not suggest that you enter the fray? Rav Huna, who expresses it as the Chol Megalgalin, means that for everything. Beit Din says we're Megalgel all Shvuot, or we make a suggestion to be Megalgel. And you can see that in Rabbeinu Chananel as well, where he says, Klomar, Shavu Pishlo Ta'an, Ta'ain Ninanle. Even if he didn't make the claim on his own half, we do it on his behalf. On the other hand, the way the Rav Chista formulated, which is in the negative form, the Chol Ein Mekilin. We aren't Mekil by other Shvuot except for the Shvuah Sachir. Which means that if you approach us to be Megalgel or Shvuah, we will force the party to take a Shvuah. But if you don't request it, we're not going to suggest it on your behalf. And that'll be the Nafkamina between them. The Ritva brings an opposite approach to Rashi, that it's focused on the Sachir, not the Balabayit, which is Liftoach Lo, is that we come to the defense of the Sachir, which is that in a case where the Baal HaBayit wants to be Megalgel on the Shvuah of the Sachir, is it that if Toach Lo, we open for him and we say the Sachir has a right not to have a Megalgel on him? Or do we wait for the Sachir to speak up in order for that to be the case? So according to Rav Huna, if he wants to be Megalgel and the Sachir doesn't say anything, we're not going to stop it. On the other hand, according to Rav Chista, Mekilin, we don't allow the Baal HaBayit to force the Sachir to have a Gilgul Shvuah, even if he doesn't speak up, we're going to speak up on his behalf. Rimi Gash reads here, the Chol Ein Mekilim, Chutz Misachir, the Mekilim, is that we try to find a way where he won't have to take a Shvuah in order to collect his money. And that goes back to what the Rimi Gash said on Kedei Chayav, that Kedei Chayav is enough of a reason to say that he shouldn't have to take a Shvuah, because if we force him to take a Shvuah, he may not want to take the Shvuah, and then he's going to miss out on Kedei Chayav. And then the Chachamim did impose the Shvuah. The question is, how formal is that? According to Rav Huna, he always has to take a Shvuah. According to Rav Chista, we try to avoid the Shvuah as much as possible and not get to that point where he has to take a Shvuah. And therefore, according to the Mimigash, Liftoach Lo, it's exactly the question that was mentioned, or the difference between them, which is, do we try to find a way to get him out of the Shvuah? According to Rav Chista, yes. According to Rav Huna, no, we're not Liftoach Lo. We make him take the Shvuah in order to get his salary. And if you look in the Balei HaTosafot, he brings Peir Shritzba, the Kama Nokot. That when they said Shvuat Sachir, that's just the first of the list in our Mishnah. V'u'adin b'cholchanu d'tani b'edja. It's true of all the Shvuot that were mentioned in our Mishnah. Gevin sh'ashvuah l'tovatam. Since the Shvuah is the benefit of the party, ain't the Galgel aleihem. You can't be Megalgel on them. The party or the Toveah is only taking a Shvua Midra Banan. And since we're doing them a favor by asking the Toveah to take a Shvua, we're not going to say, oh, we asked them a favor to take the Shvua, throw this other stuff on top of it and make him do all these other Shvuot on top of it. That's not the purpose of it. The verb, the Ritzba, believes that this Kula, or this dispensation by Sechir of not being Megalgel, is not uniquely about Sechir, it's about all the examples in our Mishnah where the Toveah is Nishba, and the reason it brought Sechir is just the first of the examples. And Bali Tosfot say, the Ein Nira, says, I don't believe that's the case. The Shvat Sechir ain't al Tovato, because the Shvat of a Sechir is not for the benefit of the party taking the Shvua. The Minadin Ayan Hotel below Shvua, because from the din he would have taken out a Shvua. Ein Nishba al piece that those of Balabait. The only reason he's taking the Shvua is to placate the Balabait. Lo Marie, Davka Nakat Sechir. And the Reed disagrees with the Ritzba and says it's only about a Shvat Sechir. Mishum the Shvato ain't al piece. Because there, the Shvua is like Rashi said, only that piece that dosho by the bite. Lo chayvu al kolkach shechol agal gelolav. They don't make him so chayav that they can then roll other things on top of it. And then he discusses another case of a piece that dosho by the bite, where we do allow a gilgul Shvua, and he explains why that case, the problem was a technical problem as to why he couldn't take the Shvua, and therefore we would impose the Shvua in that case and allow for gilgul Shvua. Whereas over here, where it's not a technical problem, it's just a favor that we're doing for the Balabayit so that he feels better about the situation. But it's not the Tovato, as opposed to the Ritzba, who feels that all these Shvot of the Toveah are the Tovat, the Toveah. We're allowing him to take a Shvot and collect in those cases. So since they're a Tovato, you don't force him to also to take the Gilgul on top of it. On the other hand, the Reis says that's not true. By Sechir, it's not Latovato, but rather to placate the Balabayit, and since it's there to placate the Balabayit, that's why it's the exceptional case, and the other cases are not included. Now the last line of the Perek, Vashvi'it Mishametet. We saw the last line in the Mishnah that the Shvi'it wipes out not only loans, but Shvu'ot that are associated with those loans. Menani Milei, where is that from? Amar Gido Merav, Damar Kral, the Pasuk says, Zed Vara Shmita, Vafilu Dibur Mishametet. Dvar HaShmita means not only are the loans forgiven, but Davar, Dibur, even things which are just obligations, intangible obligations of words, like a Shvua, they are also wiped out by the Shmita. And we already said before in the Gemara that's limited to Lova and Malva cases. It's only in cases of creditor-debtor. It's not connected to the Shvuot of Aris, Shutaf, and all of those Shvuot. It's not related to that. It's specifically related to Lova and Malva. And we also indicated that it has to be a situation in which the guy was already chayav in a shvua prior to the forgiveness of the loan. Because once the loan's forgiven, then there's going to be no shvua either. Or, if there is a shvua, the shvua seems to be connected to the loan. So how we explained it back then was that it's a case of modiv and mixat. He agrees to a portion of what he owes, and then the shmitah comes. So we said there that the modiv and mixat part, the part that he agreed to, is a loan. And therefore, that admission makes it into a loan is wiped out by the Shemitah. But the part that he's koferin, the part that he denies, is not a loan. Because he denies that there's a loan there, and therefore the Shemitah doesn't wipe it out. And you would think then that the Shvua would stay in place, and he'd have to take a Shvua on that remaining part that he was kofer. The answer is that the Shemitah wipes out the Shvua, and he's not obligated in any Shvua in that case. And with that, we complete the Perek of Kol Nishbaim, Hadron Halach, Kol Nishbaim.